Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning and welcome to Creative Conversation. Today we have a co-host, Adiro Nath. Hi, Adiro.
Hi, I'm Adiro Nath. Hi.
Yeah, you want to talk a little bit? And we also have Fran Joy, which is our guest that we're interviewing today, and she's our guest artist and curator. So just real quickly, Adiro Nath, as a co-host, what is your role on our curatorial project?
Yes, I am the co-curator, and I will be a part of the Evanston Art Center curatorial fellowship alongside with Alpha. And today we are conducting our first podcast as a part of the curatorial practice.
Great, thank you. Hi, Fran. How are you today?
I'm actually good. Oh. I'm good.
Great. Thank you for doing this. We're going to get right into our half an hour by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do as an artist and curator. And if you could give a trajectory of your art practice.
Okay. Well, I always wanted to be an artist since kindergarten. I tell people I discovered finger painting in kindergarten, and that was the beginning. I didn't think that you could actually go somewhere to school and actually enjoy yourself like that. So that is where it began. But I went on through the corporate America phase because they said I would be a starving artist. So I did that for about 20 years, and then to become an unemployed corporate worker. So, that was kind of dramatic. And the first place that opened their arms to me was an art gallery. And I went in. It was a small Evanston gallery, and I went in as a basically as a salesperson, which meant I promoted other artists. I didn't deal my own artwork at that time, so I got really into promoting other artists' work, and especially artists of color. And that kind of set off the curatorial part of my identity. Then, life happens, and I went through a series of losses. Family, husbands, just a lot of very traumatic type of experiences of loss. And my husband of 8 years ago died. And that set a different course. And creativity just seemed to really rush out, like a need, a ferocious need to get out. And social justice concept came in after the Trayvon Martin killing, and I was so disturbed by the outcome and what took place. And I felt as an artist, there's a responsibility I have to show what is taking place in the world in terms of reality. So I kind of went on that direction with the social justice and also getting into female strength and female spirituality and concepts in building and organizing and protecting and bringing those concepts together in collaboration with other women and all women. No matter the color, and show those strengths and show how that can take place. So there's a spiritual aspect to my work
when
as well.
Thank you. When I first met you, that was like 2016, and we did a project together on Faces Not Forgotten Chicago, and you came in at that point and became part of that project. Is that about the time that you started doing your focus on social justice?
Social justice imagery big time during that period.
Like four,
I would say it started.
Like you were 4 years into it. I think you were like 4 years into it. So, and yeah, this is 2020, so the time has really flown. And, you know, there's so much work to be done, but I noticed that in the work that you're doing from the time I met you to now, kind of, I mean, all of it was very strong. You were doing portraiture work. Can you talk about your process in terms of your work? Even though
yes.
we talk heavily on curatorial, let's talk about you and what influences your work as an artist and your style of work.
Okay. The I've always been into tribal imagery, whether it's Native American or African or whatever is. I like indigenous imagery. So I did a series of masks when I really started getting back into this in 2012. And then I do these large screens, custom-made screens, which, you know, also have a lot of African and Native American imagery or whatever you like. So those are custom. And then with that, Trayvon Martin thing, I did an abstract piece in dedication to that. And then I started getting into, I had remembered a story of this little boy from Cabrini Green and his life experience. And I had taken a photo of his eyes were so huge, but the fear in him as a young black boy was traumatic. I could tell. And, you know, they had just witnessed something the day before. So I snapped that picture and I started working on it way back then. This was back in the 80s. And I finished it in this time period. And it had a quote on it, "I want to live." And it's been a huge thing, because that's what I felt he was experiencing at that moment. And so the eyes became this focus. And so I feel like eyes are the spirit to the soul. So any imagery that had a huge focus on the eyes, then that was extremely appealing to me. And so I was kind of known for the portraiture for the eyes. And also for people that are strong spirits that have gotten through the heaviest of dramas, like a Nelson Mandela goes to prison for 17 years, comes out, he's the president. Maya Angelou, because she experienced such this huge abuse as a child, and culminating in her losing her speech for like 5 years, and then she becomes the voice of the world, so to speak. So to show those images to people that you can get over things, you can still succeed, you can still overcome when things are at their worst. And so I have a strong faith, so I try to push that through too. Or like a Malala, because she was shot in the head because she wanted to get educated. Now she's an Oxford grad, you know, and a spokesperson internationally for women and education. So those things pull me in, as well as the fact that black boys and men are targets. They're literally hunted. And I just wanted to put that out there, because that's real. It's the truth. And then my angel is based off of the burden of dealing that thought. Sorry. to get I get emotional about it.
No, I'm listening. I mean, it's really interesting in how you're pulling, the connections of your art. And I have actually on your slideshow with this episode, I have those images. So I'm really glad that you're able to talk about why. And I think it's really important when artists talk about the why and how they're motivated and what goes beyond, their work, especially in a spiritual sense, because that connects the audience with your work. But what I want to do is ask you this specific question, and you pretty much were answering it, but what are some ways we as artists examine the state of our environment, and what is the intersection of art and social justice as seen in the practice of curators? So now you're moving from yourself as the artist and moving into yourself as the curator. And how does that intersect?
Well, for one, I'm a staunch supporter of creativity in all forms and pushing talent, exposing talent. I love to do that, connecting talent with other talent. And so the trying to bring a lot of talented pieces together, sometimes people, especially if you're a person of color, you might not get the same opportunities in terms of exposure or exhibitions. And as I was on the Evanston Arts Council, I wanted to at least have a seat that I could assist in that happening with other artists that may not have opportunities. So that was the mindset about it. And then I started putting shows together that I wanted to see. I put a show together that I would want to go to. So I would pull the artists that were appealing to me and to other people. As long as I knew there was a lot of talent there, I want to pull it together, throw some spoken word in there and some music and, have a real live experience of a lot of culture and creativity. And that started early in the 80s, different places, and then came back again once I moved back to Evanston from Los Angeles. So
Why, you pull together Soulworks. What was the inspiration in pulling that exhibition together? That's the current exhibit that just came down.
Rose Cannon of Cannon Fine Art, we started last year as a team to put some emphasis on artists of color. That was her purpose for her gallery, is to bring in artists of color. So we figured it was, some kind of spiritual hookup, and that we should go ahead and just do this thing. And we had another person with us, Cherie, who actually came up with the name Soulworks. And it was meant to be a collaboration of women of color and bringing talented artists together. And it started with a pop-up at the 1100 Florence Gallery here in Evanston, a very popular gallery in town in the West Village area. And we did a couple there, and it went on from there. We put things in Artem Gallery, which is an opportunity for people to display their work. You pay a little fee monthly, but it gets a lot of activity there. And so I know a lot of people in the Evanston culture arts community because of being on the Arts Council, and you make those connections, and you work with people, and I love being in creative environments with creative people, no matter what color, what age, or whatever. But I love being here because of that, because it's you can really dive into it here. So that exhibit put 12 artists of color together, all having some connection to Evanston. at some point, either they went to school here, Northwestern, or they worked here, or they did shows on the lakefront here, or something like that. Some of these relationships go back several years. So it was a great exhibit. I loved it. I was very proud of it. Rose and I both were proud of that exhibit. I was sad for it to come down. I loved Alpha's pieces in the center place where they were. I thought that was perfect. And it was fun to do. And we put it together relatively quickly because it had been canceled. But it shows you, if you got a strong faith and you got your stuff together, pull it off. You got a few days, let's put it together, you know. So we didn't know what was going to happen with that show with COVID.
We started talking about that exhibit in January, actually, when you invited me to participate. And it was supposed to have an opening in February.
April, right? April 3rd, and it was canceled. You know, hopefully to be rescheduled. And so we knew it was going to come back, but we thought it would be all virtual because of this new reality. You have to learn how to work outside the box no matter what, because life goes on. So you got to figure it out. Yeah. And so I thought it was going to be a more limited capacity, but they gave us the opportunity to show because the first floor was available. And I thought it was great for each artist was able to have their own little environment within the gallery, and I thought that was just great. And a lot of people came through. We brought the Evanston Arts Council through for a private tour. So it got a lot of buzz. So I'm still excited about it.
Yeah, because I know that the Evanston Arts Center had on the second floor created an auxiliary gallery, and we were going to, you know, exhibit there in the alternative space in the hallway. So so for it to come down on the main floor of the gallery, that was exciting news for all of us. But our time is really clicking by here, and Adiro had some questions that she wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, so friends,
she's still on the line here.
Yes.
Okay.
So friend, thank you so much for sharing your story with Alpha and I. It's inspiring to hear and see your success as an artist and curator, especially as I embark on my journey as an emerging curator. So friend, be that you've lived in Chicago, New Orleans, Los Angeles, and now Evanston, and we understand how an artist's work is greatly impacted by the state of their environment, I wanted to ask you, what responsibility do artists have to display the times in their art? And how do artists impact their environment and contribute to the overall vitality of a city?
Well, that's a great question. While working with the Evanston Arts Center during this time period of racial tension, they decided upon basically on themselves to post this letter of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. And they also had five artists, a team led by Sholo Beverly and one of our artists, Bobs, and David Niari also participated with that Black Lives Matter sign that's painted up North Evanston on Central Street in their parking lot in a very creative manner. So that was another way the artists could be utilized. And there was something else you said. Can you repeat that question again? Because there was something particular I wanted to say, and I don't want to forget it.
Yeah, no problem. How do artists impact their environment and contribute to the overall vitality of a city?
Okay. So in that, in the Black Lives Matter sign, that was one way. We have had an incident with where it was painted in another location where it's been vandalized already, but it's still holding there. So that was that. And then when we did this show, and I was getting a lot of questions from my friends from the white community that I'm, you know, really close to, and you know, they reach out and they want to know how to help. To me, one way to help is supporting and buying art from artists of color. Sometimes they don't have the same opportunities in terms of showing, exhibiting, and selling their work. So it's like reach out, deal that thought. And then where I'm probably mostly known, at least in this area, as a social justice, or I call it social injustice artist, I wasn't prepared for this particular show to demonstrate that type of work. I had actually been exploring some other areas and wanting to go a little bit more abstract and less realism, because sometimes it takes a lot out of you when you get that emotional with a piece, where I've battled with a couple of pieces, so, and they won. And so it gets really emotional. So I wanted to kind of lighten things up a little bit too. But then there is a responsibility I feel I have to have as an artist to actually show what's taking place in the world. And I had been making masks and doing stuff like that, trying to give people a different way of having, since they feel so forced to wear these things, a better way to do it. But also I did a few little pieces that I added to that show that were about right now, about wearing masks, about buckle up, 2020 is going to be a bumpy ride. Buckle up for the rest of the year. And that stop killing black people. Stop killing us. And
yeah.
I just did three little small pieces just so I could get those words in, because that wasn't where I was going with this particular exhibit. But then I brought back some of the older pieces from 2014, 2016, when I was really graphically putting social injustice out there. I thought they needed to come back and be seen again, so I added them to the exhibit. I don't know if that answers your question, but some people don't feel a need to deal social justice, and that's totally okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because as you're expressing yourself as an artist, that's still social justice, because you're putting your talent and creativity out there and sharing it with the world as a person of color in any arena. So that's okay, and that's good, and that should be promoted. I have some kind of spiritual thing going on about it, and I have a need. So for me, it's a need to deal with. But if you go back in history, there's always some artwork to actually show you what was actually happening.
Yeah.
So, Fran, I know that we kind of ask, you know, try not to be repetitious in our questions, but one, and you've answered this, but I want to kind of like give you the question, because you've, you know, your family has, you know, experienced loss, and I know within that loss, you have not been able to do his portrait, and again, he was killed because of gun violence, and I want you to be able to talk about that and give a minute and a tribute to him. And I think that we also always should speak the name, you know, of our lost ones that have been killed due to violence. But how do you create artwork about violence that helps audiences understand violence as a lived reality?
Oh, that that question almost gives me the chills, because when I did that program with you, the Faces Not Forgotten, my portrait was of a 14-year-old little girl who had been killed by an 11-year-old little boy. And she was in her graduation outfit. I still get emotional about it. It was like she had just got her hair cut. She had her jewelry on. She was ready for the world. And both their lives were destroyed in that moment. That was a heavy piece. I did it in 2 days, but I was committed to her and to her family's memory. I did that piece, I Want to Live, based off of the little boy from Cabrini Green, but the person that bought that piece bought it 2 days, and was crying when he bought the piece, 2 days before Xavier Joy, my step-grandson, was shot to death and murdered. 23 years old, working on the South Side in community with at-risk kids, a good kid, respectful kid, always had a hug and respect for me. Both my daughters babysat him when he was a kid. I babysat him through school, after school. It was tough. It was really, really tough. So I also have a message in terms of, because that's not the first time I have experienced loss by gun violence. My first husband also. So it's something to point out. When I talk about value and valuing life, I am talking about valuing the life of each other as well, whether it's wearing masks, whether it's having a better sense of yourself. So if we learn our history, the next show I wanted to do, which I hope it doesn't get canceled because of COVID, is called The Glory Days. I wanted to put a spotlight on pre-colonization, pre-enslavement, so that our kids and all kids can have a better sense of how their life has value. And I feel like if you can learn that value and not just go by what you see on film or on TV or hear in music, that maybe you can have a sense of, I value my life and I'm going to value my brother's life down the block, you know? So, yeah, it's very, Xavier Joy died 3 years ago in June, a few days after my husband 5 years previous. So those were two heavy hits, and I talk about value of life a lot because it's important. The family was devastated and still are. So that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you for that response, because I know, like I said, it would behoove me not to make sure that we pay tribute to, you know, what artists go through in our own, you know, in our own realities and how it impacts the work that we do in the community, because we really take our work, you know, serious, and we're really emotional about our work. So we have a couple of minutes left. Adiro, do you want to say anything about our upcoming events here in Chicago? I mean, in Bronzeville, where the trolley tour is coming up. We're having a virtual trolley tour. You can find out more about that at bronzevilleartdistrict.com. And it is July 17th is our first virtual gallery opening at 7 p.m.
Yes, Adiro. And then following that, you and I will be conducting an Instagram takeover of Evanston Art Center on July 18th and 19th, and then also on July 25th and 26th. There we'll be speaking more about our curatorial practice, the fellowship, upcoming programming that we have, and just remember to check out for hashtag Evanston Art Center, hashtag EAC Curatorial Fellowship, hashtag Instagram Takeover. It's going to be an exciting time.
All right, and thank you, Fran, for joining us today, and also thank you for your encouragement for us to apply for the curatorial fellowship.
Thank you, and, you know, this, what you're doing is really good for the world, because creativity is really needed to get through life, period. Kids need to be able to express themselves creatively. So just keep doing what you're doing. Look forward to working with you as part of the exhibition committee at the Evanston Arts Center. So I look forward to it. I'm a hopeful person, and I believe in going forward and thinking outside the box when you can or when you have to. But thank you for having me on.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce Creative Conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.